Friday, December 9, 2011 was an ordinary late afternoon in Atchison, Kansas, a small city of about 10,000 tucked against the Missouri River. But just after 4 p.m., Sergeant David Ernest Ensbrenner, a 46-year-old, 24-year veteran of the Atchison Police Department, answered a routine call to help serve a nuisance order at a residential home near 12th and Division. In a flash, an unprovoked attack shattered that routine. A man named Skylar Barbie, just 25, opened fire from the street, killing Ensbrenner. He then turned the gun on himself. Barbie's motive remains obscure, though investigators believe he harbored deep resentment toward law enforcement, possibly tied to his father's life sentence in Louisiana. Sergeant Ensbrenner left behind a wife and three daughters, and the town of Atchison held its breath over its first law enforcement death in 110 years. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1: Routine Duty, Fatal Consequence. The sun was beginning to dip behind the rooftops of Atchison, Kansas, on December 9, 2011. It was the kind of quiet winter afternoon where everything felt settled, predictable. Atchison, with its riverfront charm and tight-knit community, was the kind of place where neighbors knew each other's dogs by name, and police work, while steady, rarely made the news. For Sergeant David Ensbrenner, it was just another Friday on duty. After nearly 25 years in uniform, the decorated officer had developed a rhythm. He was the kind of man people trusted instantly, soft-spoken, fair, and deeply respected not only by his colleagues but by the community he served. At 4:10 p.m., Sergeant Ensbrenner accompanied city code enforcement officials to a property located at 1026 North 12th Street. The purpose was straightforward: to assist in serving a nuisance abatement order. The house had been flagged due to ongoing complaints, litter, noise, possible unauthorized occupancy. As standard protocol required, an officer was present to ensure the situation remained calm. What unfolded next took less than 60 seconds. As Sergeant Ensbrenner stood near the front yard, a man, later identified as 25-year-old Skylar Barbie, approached from the street. He was not part of the conversation, not part of the order. But without warning, Barbie pulled out a handgun and opened fire. One round struck Sergeant Ensbrenner in the head. He collapsed immediately. In the seconds that followed, chaos erupted. Barbie turned the weapon on himself, falling just feet away from the officer he had ambushed. The scene was still. Neighbors froze in place. The sound of the shots echoed off the walls of nearby houses. Moments later, sirens pierced the winter air. By 4:25 p.m., backup had arrived. Paramedics rushed in, but it was too late. Sergeant Ensbrenner was pronounced dead on sight. The man who had served the community since 1987 was gone in a blink. Barbie, too, was dead, killed by a self-inflicted gunshot wound. The immediate aftermath was confusion. Skylar Barbie had not been the subject of the nuisance complaint. He was not the homeowner. So why was he there? Why would he ambush an officer in broad daylight, then kill himself? The Kansas Bureau of Investigation, KBI, was called in almost instantly. It had been more than 110 years since Atchison lost a law enforcement officer in the line of duty. The town wasn't ready for this. No one was. Sergeant David Ensbrenner had worn badge number 31 for over two decades. A father of three daughters and a loving husband to his wife, Shelley, he was known for never raising his voice, even when situations grew tense. He had been involved in numerous community initiatives, from youth mentorship to traffic safety campaigns. His colleagues described him as rock solid. His family saw him as their foundation. Hours after the shooting, a quiet crowd began forming outside the Atchison Police Department. Candles, flowers, and handwritten notes lined the sidewalk. Children from the local school, where Ensbrenner had occasionally volunteered, dropped off drawings. One child wrote, "Thank you for protecting us." The loss was personal. As the investigation began, the questions were immediate and haunting. Was Barbie targeting Sergeant Ensbrenner specifically? Was this an act of calculated revenge, or a moment of irrational violence? Within 24 hours, law enforcement confirmed that Skylar Barbie had a record. Just months prior, he had been arrested for battery against a law enforcement officer. Court records suggested he had deep-rooted anger toward police. Some believed he was spiraling emotionally in the weeks leading up to the shooting, but no one could have predicted this. Barbie's father, according to public records, was incarcerated in Louisiana on a life sentence. Some believe the younger Barbie blamed law enforcement for the trajectory of his life. Friends said he had grown increasingly erratic, moody, withdrawn, sometimes paranoid. Yet that day, he hadn't uttered a word. No threats. No warning. Just gunfire. By Saturday morning, the story had reached state and national headlines. Atchison officer gunned down in ambush, read the Kansas City Star. Veteran officer killed in line of duty, echoed local news channels. Reporters arrived in waves, but most were met with quiet grief. The people of Atchison were mourning. This was not just a police death. It was the death of a man who had been a constant presence in the town's daily life. Flags were lowered to half-staff across Kansas. Governor Sam Brownback issued a statement calling Sergeant Ensbrenner a true public servant whose sacrifice will not be forgotten. But for those closest to him, the words could not fill the space he left behind. Shelley Ensbrenner, speaking publicly just days later, held her composure as she addressed a community still reeling. David was a man of peace. He believed in helping people, not punishing them. He believed in second chances. He didn't deserve this. None of us did. Her voice cracked, not from anger but from heartbreak. The shooting didn't just rattle Atchison. It sent waves through law enforcement agencies across Kansas and beyond. The Kansas State Troopers Association issued a statement urging departments to reevaluate how nuisance orders are served and how officers are supported emotionally and logistically. What happened to Sergeant Ensbrenner wasn't supposed to happen. A nuisance abatement order was routine, not risky. But the reality of modern policing is that any situation, no matter how mundane it may seem, can turn deadly in seconds. In the days that followed, the Atchison Police Department released a tribute video composed of old photos, ceremony footage, and clips of Sergeant Ensbrenner during community events. One shot showed him kneeling beside a young boy, helping him fix a bike chain. Another, in uniform at a school crossing, holding out his hand as kids passed by. The footage was silent, but its impact was thunderous. December 9, 2011, changed Atchison forever. It started as a regular Friday. Quiet streets, familiar faces, and another call logged on the board. But that call, Sergeant Ensbrenner's final one, marked the beginning of a tragedy that would echo far beyond the city's borders. And as the candlelight vigil swelled on the steps of the police department that weekend, one truth became painfully clear. It only takes one moment for a community to lose its guardian. And that moment had come. Chapter 2. The Victim, A Lifetime of Service. Long before he became Sergeant David Ensbrenner, the badge, the uniform, and the honor, he was just David, a small-town Kansas kid with a big heart and steady hands. He was born and raised in Atchison, where the air smelled like soil after a storm and everybody waved at everyone else. His father was a welder, his mother a school secretary. They didn't have much, but what they had was love, structure, and a deep respect for responsibility. David didn't grow up dreaming of becoming a cop. He was the kind of boy who liked to fix things. As a teenager, he could take apart a lawnmower engine and rebuild it before dinner. But it wasn't until his senior year of high school, after a ride-along program offered by the Atchison Police Department, that the seed was planted. He wasn't drawn to the adrenaline, like some. What drew him was the idea of service, being useful, being there when others were not. In 1987, at the age of 22, David joined the Atchison Police Department. The same year, he married Shelley, his high school sweetheart. She would later say that David never treated the job like a job. It was a calling. He believed in protecting people, she said, even if they didn't know they needed protecting. Over the next 24 years, David rose quietly through the ranks. He wasn't flashy, he wasn't loud, and he never once asked for recognition. He showed up, day in, day out, in the heat of summer, in the thick of snow. If his shift ended at 4 p.m., but someone needed a ride home, he didn't check his watch, he just did it. He never shot his weapon in the line of duty, never filed a single complaint against a citizen, but he saved lives. There was the night he pulled a young man off the edge of the Amelia Earhart Bridge. No news crews were there. No medals followed. He simply held the man until he stopped crying and helped him into a cruiser. The only person who knew was the dispatcher who sent him. There was the fire on 10th Street, when David ran inside a smoke-filled home to help pull out an elderly woman before the fire department arrived. "That's not your job," his partner had said. David didn't respond. He just took off his coat, covered her head, and walked her out. By the early 2000s, Sergeant Ensbrenner had become a fixture of Atchison. He coached his daughter's soccer teams, volunteered at their elementary school, and ran the department's outreach program for teens. His favorite assignment was community engagement. Not traffic stops, not enforcement, not drug busts. He liked talking to people, especially the kids. When he wasn't in uniform, David wore jeans, a chief's hoodie, and a weathered Kansas State cap that looked like it had survived a decade of bonfires. On Sundays, he went fishing. Not to catch anything. Just to sit. Reflect. Recharge. Despite the toll the job could take, David never brought the weight home. He didn't talk about the worst parts, Shelley recalled. But I knew when he needed quiet. He'd go out back, sit on the porch, and stare at the stars for a while. That's how he let go of things. Inside the department, Sergeant Ensbrenner was respected in a way that made young officers lean in when he spoke. Not because he demanded it, but because they wanted to understand how someone could be both firm and kind. He was the officer who could defuse a domestic dispute without cuffs. The kind of guy who, if a teenager got caught shoplifting, would drive him home and sit with his mother instead of booking him. There were plenty of officers who were brave, but David was brave and decent. There's a difference, and everyone knew it. When word of his death spread through the department on the evening of December 9th, disbelief settled in like a fog. Many officers had just spoken to him hours earlier. Others were headed home when they got the call. One officer, who asked not to be named, said simply, "He was the best of us." That weekend, officers from across Kansas and neighboring states began arriving in Atchison. Not because they had to, but because they needed to. It wasn't just a line of duty death. It was his death. And that hit different. The parking lot of the police department turned into a gathering place. There were flowers and candles, yes, but also photographs. Kids brought drawings of Sergeant Ensbrenner, helping them cross the street. Shop owners posted signs in their windows. "Rest easy, Sergeant Ensbrenner. You kept us safe." And the town felt emptier. David left behind three daughters, each just beginning their adult lives. One was in college, another just out of high school, and the youngest still navigating teenagehood. To them, he wasn't a hero, he was Dad. The man who made pancakes every Sunday. The one who never missed a dance recital. The guy who still wrote them birthday letters in pen and sealed them with a tiny smiley face on the envelope. Shelley would later say those letters are now the most valuable thing they own. He had planned to retire in 2 years. He wanted to travel. Fix up the boat he'd been tinkering with in the garage. Maybe even open a bait shop on the river. Nothing fancy. Just peace. Just time. But time wasn't given. In the years that followed, Sergeant David Ensbrenner's name would be etched into stone. Into plaques. Into ceremonies. But what stayed with people most wasn't the tribute. It was the memory of who he was. A calm voice, a steady hand, a man who never turned his back on a neighbor in need. And that Friday, when he responded to a simple nuisance complaint, he didn't know it would be his last call. But he answered anyway. Because that's what he did. Chapter 3. The Shooter, Skylar Barbie's Shadow. Skylar Barbie was born in 1986, the same year David Ensbrenner was promoted to full-time officer in Atchison. But their lives were never destined to run parallel. Where David grew into structure, community, and service, Skylar fell early into instability, resentment, and disconnection. And by the time their paths violently collided on that cold Friday in 2011, they were on opposite ends of a very long road. Skylar's childhood was marked by inconsistency. His father, James Barbie, had been in and out of trouble for years before finally receiving a life sentence in Louisiana for an unrelated violent crime. His mother struggled to raise Skylar and his siblings alone, cycling through low-paying jobs and housing insecurity. Teachers described Skylar as intelligent but volatile, a boy who sometimes lit up in class but was more often angry, withdrawn, or defiant. In middle school, he started skipping classes and fighting. By high school, he was already in the juvenile justice system. Assault, vandalism, drug possession, petty crimes that started stacking. Nobody intervened in a way that changed his direction. He slipped through cracks that had already been widening beneath his feet. At 18, Skylar left Atchison briefly, moving to Texas to stay with relatives. it didn't last. He returned less than a year later, angrier and more directionless than before. Over the next several years, he worked odd jobs, roofing, warehouse shifts, landscaping, but he rarely held anything longer than a few weeks. Those who knew him said he was either all fire or all fog. Sometimes energetic and charming. Sometimes staring through you like you weren't even there. The years leading up to December 2011 showed a deeper unraveling. Police records show that Skyler had multiple run-ins with law enforcement, a resisting arrest charge, a battery case involving a police officer, a string of disorderly conduct citations. He never served long stretches in jail, but each incident added to his growing file and growing resentment. Those close to him began noticing his obsession with authority, particularly with the police. He believed they were targeting him, that he'd never get a fair shake, that his last name alone made him a threat in the eyes of the law. And truth be told, some of that wasn't paranoia. Being the son of a man serving life for murder had marked him. His anger, however, had no breaks. According to friends, Skyler had grown increasingly consumed by conspiracy theories and ideas of injustice. He often blamed the system for everything in his life. He talked like the whole world was out to break him, said one former roommate. But he never did anything to get out of his own way either. Then came the arrest for assaulting an officer, a charge that truly unhinged him. Skyler believed he was set up, though evidence and witness reports proved otherwise. After that, he stopped trusting everyone, even his family. What many didn't know was that Skyler had started to isolate completely in the final 2 months of his life. He wasn't working. He wasn't communicating. He was spiraling in silence. No therapy. No medication. No guidance. Just thoughts. Heavy, dark, repetitive. And somewhere in that spiral, a plan was forming. It's important to note that Skyler was not the target of the nuisance abatement order that brought Sergeant Ensbrenner to the house on North 12th Street. He wasn't named in the documents. He wasn't even a resident there. But witnesses said he had been hanging around the area for several days. Some said he looked strung out. Others said he looked ready to snap. The question everyone still asks is, why did he do it? The Kansas Bureau of Investigation dug into Skyler's recent behavior, hoping for clues. They found notes in his apartment, scribbled rants, anger at law enforcement, references to betrayal, to injustice, to making a point. But no clear motive, no manifesto, no final confession. In death, Skyler left behind more confusion than clarity. He had no will, no formal diagnosis, no goodbye. He didn't kill Sergeant Ensbrenner in the middle of a chase, or a raid, or a heated altercation. He walked up to a man performing a routine civic duty and pulled the trigger without a single word. Then he killed himself. It was an execution, followed by self-erasure. Some community members wanted to write Skyler off as pure evil, a monster not worth understanding. Others, especially mental health professionals and local counselors, saw his story as a tragic case of untreated illness and generational trauma left to fester. Was he a killer? Yes. But he was also a broken human being, one who never got the help he clearly needed, and who, in the end, made a choice that destroyed multiple lives, including his own. The pain Skyler left behind wasn't confined to Sergeant Ensbrenner's family. His own mother, already carrying the weight of her husband's incarceration, now faced the unthinkable: the loss of a son to a murder-suicide, with the whole town watching. She released a brief statement days after the shooting. I do not defend what my son did. My heart breaks for the officer's family. I only wish someone had reached Skyler in time. He was lost, and we didn't know how to help him. But it was too late. The damage was done. And as investigators pieced together the fragments of Skyler Barbie's life, they kept coming back to the same haunting truth. There were signs, plenty of them, but no one knew where they would lead. Chapter 4: Anatomy of the Incident. December 9, 2011, was gray and cold in Atchison, Kansas. The sky hung low with winter clouds, and a light wind drifted down the quiet residential streets. It was a typical small-town afternoon. Kids walking home from school, porch lights flickering on, neighbors finishing up yard work before the sun dipped below the rooftops. Nothing in the air warned of what was coming. Sergeant David Ensbrenner reported for duty just after noon that day. His shift started routinely. A few traffic stops. A call about a suspicious vehicle. Some paperwork. Around 3:30 p.m., he he received a call to assist Atchison's code enforcement team in serving a nuisance abatement order at a property located at 1026 North 12th Street. The complaint was standard: debris in the yard, ongoing disturbances, possible code violations. Sergeant Ensbrenner had responded to dozens like it over his career. No red flags. No backup needed. By 4:05 p.m., he had arrived on scene. The house at 1026 North 12th sat on a corner lot. Old wood siding, sagging porch, broken blinds in the windows. It wasn't abandoned, but it looked neglected. The front yard was littered with scraps. Old tires, a broken refrigerator, rusted tools. A code enforcement officer was already there, clipboard in hand, ready to speak with the homeowner. Sergeant Ensbrenner took a position near the walkway, standing back slightly as the official approached the door. At 4:10 p.m., something shifted. Skylar Barbie appeared, not from the house, but from the sidewalk. According to multiple witnesses, he had been lingering across the street near a vacant lot. No one paid him much attention at first. He wore a black hoodie, jeans, and a hat pulled low over his eyes. One neighbor would later describe him as pacing like he was working something out in his head. Without a word, Skylar crossed the street and walked straight toward the yard. What happened next took only a few seconds, barely enough time for anyone to process. At approximately 4:11 p.m., Skylar Barbie reached into his waistband, pulled out a black handgun, and opened fire. One shot. It struck Sergeant Ensbrenner in the side of the head. He collapsed instantly. The code enforcement officer froze, ducking behind a nearby car. A neighbor screamed from a porch. A child ran back inside a house across the street. Another round was fired. This one into the air, then silence. Moments later, Skylar placed the gun to his own head and pulled the trigger. He fell backward into the grass, just feet from where Sergeant Ensbrenner now lay motionless. It was 4:12 p.m. The first 911 call came in at 4:13 p.m. Caller: there's been a shooting, officer down. I think he's dead. Oh my God, he's not moving. Multiple calls followed within seconds. Dispatchers scrambled to confirm the location. The address lit up on their screen, followed by the chilling word: officer shot. Units from Atchison PD, the sheriff's office, and EMS were immediately dispatched. By 4:18 p.m., sirens filled the air. Paramedics were the first to reach Sergeant Ensbrenner. They attempted to assess him on site, but found no pulse. The injury was catastrophic. There was nothing to be done. A second team approached the body of Skylar Barbie. He was dead on impact. The gun, a 9mm semi-automatic pistol, was still in his hand. Officers quickly secured the area. Yellow tape went up. A perimeter was established. Witnesses were taken aside for statements. The code enforcement officer, still shaking, confirmed that Skylar had not spoken a word before firing. It was like he had already decided, he told investigators. He didn't even look angry. He just did it. At 4:30 p.m., the Kansas Bureau of Investigation was notified. Due to the nature of the shooting, a law enforcement officer killed in the line of duty, the KBI would lead the investigation. By 6 p.m., KBI agents were on the scene. They began cataloging evidence immediately. Shell casings were recovered. Photographs were taken from multiple angles. The street was closed to traffic, and neighboring houses were canvassed for surveillance footage. Skylar's body was identified by his fingerprints, which were already in the state database due to prior arrests. The next several hours were quiet, clinical, and cold. The coroner arrived around 7 p.m. Sergeant Ensbrenner's body was removed under a flag-draped stretcher. Fellow officers saluted in silence. Some wept openly. Others stared at the ground, stunned. They had lost a brother. Barbie's body followed shortly after, unceremoniously. No salute. No ceremony. Just a sheet over a face no one wanted to see again. But even in death, Barbie raised questions. Why was he at the scene? How did he know the police would be there? Was the shooting spontaneous or planned? Investigators combed through his recent phone activity, text messages, and any known associates. They found nothing connecting him directly to the nuisance order. His presence there remained unexplained. But his intent, based on witness statements and the speed of the attack, seemed premeditated. He wasn't fleeing. He wasn't reacting. He had come to kill. The final report issued weeks later by the KBI included the following summary. Sergeant David Ensbrenner was killed in an unprovoked ambush while assisting with a routine civil enforcement order. the shooter, Skylar Barbie, fired without warning, without provocation, and took his own life seconds later. Motive remains unclear, though prior incidents and documents suggest hostility toward law enforcement. There was no conspiracy, no accomplices, just one broken man, one loaded weapon, and one irreplaceable loss. What haunted many was the brevity of the event. 4 minutes. From the moment Sergeant Ensbrenner stepped onto that lawn to the moment two bodies lay still. Barely enough time to register a threat. Barely enough time to say goodbye. For his family, there was no warning. No final phone call. No last words. Just a knock on the door, and the worst news imaginable. The city of Atchison would spend the next week holding vigils, ceremonies, and silent marches. But those 4 minutes would stretch endlessly in the minds of everyone involved. Replayed. Rewound. Questioned. Could anyone have stopped it? Could anyone have seen it coming? The answer, over and over again, was no. Chapter 5, Community in Mourning. The morning after the shooting, Atchison didn't wake up, it stood still. The kind of silence that hangs after a tragedy was everywhere. Church bells rang a little slower. Car radios played a little softer. Teachers paused before roll call. And everywhere you went, someone was whispering the same name. Sergeant David Ensbrenner. He wasn't just a cop. He was their cop. Their neighbor. Their coach. The man who helped shovel sidewalks for seniors in the winter and gave lollipops to kids from his cruiser in the summer. He had worn that badge for 24 years. And now, that badge sat draped in black cloth inside the Atchison Police Department lobby, beside a framed photo of David smiling with his daughters at a community barbecue. A sign outside City Hall read in plain white letters, "We mourn our protector. Rest in peace, Sergeant Ensbrenner." And the mourning had only just begun. By that Saturday night, a crowd of over 500 people had gathered in front of the police department for a candlelight vigil. Entire families came out, wrapped in scarves and heavy coats, candles cupped in gloved hands. Some stood in silence. Others cried freely. A few children clutched hand-drawn posters. "Thank you, Officer David." One little girl had written, "You kept us safe. Now sleep safe." It wasn't just the town's residents who came. Law enforcement officers from every corner of Kansas, Missouri, and Nebraska arrived, many still in uniform. They didn't speak much. They just stood in silent formation as a tribute to one of their own. A sea of blue lined the sidewalks, their badges reflecting the soft candlelight like stars fallen to earth. Sheriff Jack Calhoun took the mic near the department steps. His voice was rough. "Warn, David wasn't just an officer. He was a man who believed in this town. Who walked every block and knew every face. He never treated this badge like armor. He wore it like a promise. And he kept that promise until the very end." A murmur of emotion rolled through the crowd. Then silence. Then prayer. Then the lighting of a single torch that would stay burning through the night. Watched over by two volunteers who took turns keeping it lit, even as temperatures dipped below freezing. The next morning, churches across Atchison filled with heavy hearts. Pastors adjusted sermons. Priests lit extra candles. Entire congregations stood in prayer, heads bowed not just for David, but for Shelley and the three daughters left behind. The grief was collective. Personal. In small towns, mourning doesn't need permission. It just moves from one front porch to the next, from one heart to the other. Atchison didn't just lose an officer. It lost part of its identity. At a local diner where David often grabbed coffee, the server left a cup at his usual booth, black, two sugars, with a note underneath that read, "Always on duty." In the days that followed, blue ribbons began appearing everywhere. Mailboxes. Trees. Lamp posts. Car antennas. A hardware store donated hundreds of feet of ribbon, free to anyone who wanted to tie one in David's honor. And they did. Block by block. Street by street. Even the high school football field was wrapped in blue. His daughters, still too stunned to speak publicly, were surrounded constantly by friends, classmates, counselors, teachers. Nobody let them grieve alone. And Shelley, stoic, but shattered, became the face of grace under unimaginable pressure. She didn't want cameras. She didn't want headlines. She just wanted to make sure her husband was remembered as he lived, not just as he died. On December 16, 2011, exactly 1 week after the shooting, Sergeant David Ensbrenner was laid to rest. The funeral was held at First Christian Church in Atchison. The line of mourners stretched for blocks. Police motorcycles led the procession, followed by hundreds of patrol vehicles with lights flashing, but no sirens. Blue and red danced silently across storefronts and rooftops as the motorcade passed. Inside the church, the pews were packed shoulder to shoulder. His badge, number 31, was retired in a quiet ceremony. The chief of police, voice quaking, handed Shelley the folded flag that had draped David's coffin. She pressed it to her chest, eyes closed. Outside, the streets were lined with civilians holding signs. "Thank you, Sergeant Ensbrenner. Atchison remembers. Gone but not forgotten." A group of schoolchildren sang "Amazing Grace" as the hearse passed by. One boy in a scout uniform stood rigidly in salute, tears running silently down his cheeks. The burial took place at Mount Vernon Cemetery, a quiet hilltop overlooking the town. The final call, broadcast over the police radio, crackled softly through squad car radios across the region. "Unit 31, Sergeant David Ensbrenner. End of watch, December 9, 2011. You are gone but not forgotten. Rest easy, brother. We have the watch from here." And then came the silence, the kind that swells when a town says goodbye. But grief doesn't vanish after funerals. In the weeks that followed, Atchison struggled to return to normal. The department implemented grief counseling for all officers. Schools brought in trauma specialists. Local businesses organized fundraisers for the Ensbrenner family. One mechanic offered free oil changes for all police vehicles for the next year. A bakery made cookies shaped like badge number 31 and gave them out for free. One per customer, no questions asked. People just wanted to do something, to give something, to honor a man who had given so much. The mayor proposed renaming a section of North 12th Street as Ensbrenner Way. A community park was later renamed in his honor, complete with a plaque, a bench, and a small garden. Children now play there, unaware of the name's full weight. But their parents know. And they tell them. Because in towns like Atchison, stories are passed down like heirlooms. And Sergeant Ensbrenner's story, the man who served, protected, and never wavered, will always be part of that fabric. Chapter 6, Legal and Investigative Follow-Up. When a police officer is killed in the line of duty, the weight of justice doesn't just fall on a courtroom. It falls on the system. Every link in the chain of law enforcement, from patrol to policy, is tested. But in Sergeant David Ensbrenner's case, there was no trial, no cross-examination, no defense attorney, no jury. The gunman, Skylar Barbie, was already dead before the blue lights even reached the scene. And yet there was still a case to close, still a community to answer to, still a city in pain. The Kansas Bureau of Investigation, KBI, took lead on the case within hours of the shooting. Their goal, to uncover every detail of the incident, build a clear timeline, and rule out any further threats. The presence of a suicide doesn't negate due process. It intensifies it. Every unanswered question becomes heavier. Every rumor, more dangerous. KBI agents secured the crime scene at 1026 North 12th Street by sundown on December 9th. They photographed every angle, collected shell casings, secured the firearm, and interviewed more than a dozen witnesses. By the end of the weekend, they had retrieved surveillance footage from two nearby houses. While neither camera captured the moment of the shooting directly, one caught Skylar Barbie walking back and forth on the sidewalk earlier that afternoon, lingering, waiting. The investigators built a minute-by-minute reconstruction of the timeline. From dispatch logs, body camera recordings, and 911 calls, they confirmed what Atchison already knew deep down. This wasn't a heat-of-the-moment act. It was targeted. It was planned. The firearm used by Barbie, a black 9mm semi-automatic pistol, had the serial number scratched off. Forensics technicians used acid restoration to recover the number, tracing the weapon back to a straw purchase in Missouri 2 years earlier. It had changed hands multiple times through illegal private sales. It had never been registered to Barbie. A search of Barbie's small apartment yielded notebooks filled with erratic writing. Anger. Paranoia. Hatred of authority. A few pages referenced "them watching me, and one day they'll see." There was no mention of Sergeant Ensbrenner by name, but one passage read, "They'll come to another house and act like it's just code enforcement, but I know better. They're always looking for a way in." Investigators also found online printouts of police protocols, officer response times, and maps of Atchison's residential blocks. There was no manifesto, but there was intent. toxicology reports confirmed that Barbie was sober at the time of the shooting. No drugs. No alcohol. The autopsy revealed no brain injury or medical condition. His actions were fully conscious. That only made the case more disturbing. The coroner's report on Sergeant Ensbrenner confirmed that he died instantly. The single gunshot wound to the side of his head left no possibility for recovery. He never saw it coming. The report also noted the absence of any defensive wounds or struggle, further proving the ambush was swift and unprovoked. The KBI's official report, released 60 days later, included the following conclusions. Sergeant David Ensbrenner was killed in an act of deliberate and targeted violence by Skylar Barbie, a known offender with a history of hostility toward law enforcement. The investigation concludes that Barbie acted alone, using an illegally acquired firearm. No accomplices or third-party involvement was found. Motive is consistent with long-standing resentment and mental instability. There was no closure, just clarity. The killer had taken justice with him. But while Barbie was gone, the system still had to respond. Not with punishment, but with change, policy review, and reforms. The Atchison Police Department, with assistance from the KBI and Kansas Peace Officers Association, launched a review of officer safety protocols for civil enforcement calls. Previously, nuisance abatement actions were considered low risk, often requiring only one officer for support. That changed immediately. A new policy was adopted within weeks. 2 officers minimum on all code enforcement visits. Body cameras mandatory for every response. Pre-call threat assessments required for properties with prior disturbances. Optional tactical backup request if any individual associated with the property had violent history. These reforms weren't just about preventing another ambush. They were about shifting the mindset. There are no routine calls anymore. The ripple effects extended beyond Atchison. Departments in surrounding towns followed suit, updating their procedures and re-evaluating officer safety training. The Kansas Law Enforcement Training Center added a module based on the Ensbrenner case, focusing on ambush awareness and civilian call risk escalation. Sergeant Ensbrenner's name became more than a memorial. It became a lesson. Meanwhile, conversations around mental health and criminal red flags resurfaced. Skylar Barbie had been in and out of trouble, flagged for aggression, and still, he slipped through. There was no system in place to track patterns across jurisdictions. If someone was spiraling, unless they committed a chargeable offense, they were invisible. State legislators introduced proposals for early intervention programs and cross-agency behavior tracking, but funding and privacy concerns slowed progress. Shelley Ensbrenner testified before a state panel in early 2012. "My husband's killer didn't come from the shadows. He came from the cracks. And we all watched those cracks widen. If we want to protect officers, we have to start where the danger begins, not just where it ends. The law couldn't punish the shooter, but it could try to prevent another one." And in that way, David Ensbrenner's death began to save lives, even after he was gone. In June 2012, the Kansas House passed a resolution honoring Sergeant Ensbrenner's service. His name was added to the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial in Washington, D.C., and the Kansas Law Enforcement Memorial in Topeka. Each May, his daughters now attend the ceremonies, quiet, dignified, proud. They've never spoken publicly about the details, but their presence is a statement. Their silence speaks for a man who can no longer speak for himself. Chapter 7: Legacy and Reflection. More than a decade has passed since the afternoon Atchison lost Sergeant David Ensbrenner, but in many ways, his presence never left. You can still feel it in the quiet spaces of the police station where his name is etched into a brass plaque. You can see it in the blue ribbons that reappear every year around December. And you can hear it in the way fellow officers speak his name, not with sorrow anymore, but with reverence. Because David didn't just die in service to his community, he lived for it. And the legacy he left behind has become a blueprint for what it means to wear the badge with honor. In the months after his death, the pain felt fresh and raw. His widow Shelley took on a role she never asked for, the public face of quiet strength. She attended city meetings, supported legislation for officer safety, and made sure David's story wasn't reduced to a headline. But behind closed doors, she was still navigating life without the man she had known since high school. Grief never really goes away. It just changes shape. Their 3 daughters each found their own way to honor their father. One pursued law. another went into public health. The youngest, still in high school when David was killed, later joined a youth mentorship program, the same one her father helped build years before. In an interview, she said, "He didn't talk about the worst things he saw on the job, but he always made sure we understood why he did it. He believed people deserved to be safe, even when they didn't know they needed saving. That belief, in protection, in service, in human decency, is what carried David through 24 years in uniform without bitterness. He saw the worst in people, but he chose to believe in their best." The Atchison Police Department changed after December 9, 2011. There was new training, stricter protocol, deeper emotional support systems. But more than policy, there was purpose. Every officer who walks through the department doors now passes a wall with David's photo beside the words, "Lead with calm, serve with courage." Those words weren't pulled from a speech. They were taken from David's personal journal, found by Shelley months after the funeral. They've since become the department's unofficial motto. Every May, during National Police Week, officers and their families gather in Topeka and Washington, D.C. to honor those who fell in the line of duty. At the Kansas Law Enforcement Memorial, Sergeant David Ensbrenner's name is engraved into stone. People come to touch it, photograph it, place flowers beneath it. One year, a rookie officer from Wichita left a note that simply read, "I wear my badge the way you wore yours." That is legacy, not statues, not headlines, but the ripple that moves through others long after you're gone. In Atchison, the park once known as North Hills Community Park was officially renamed in 2013 as Ensbrenner Park. It's modest, a few playgrounds, a walking trail, and a garden of blue flowers planted each spring by volunteers. But in the center, beneath a canopy of oak trees, stands a bronze bench. On it, an inscription reads, "A life of quiet strength, a heart for his city." Families now gather there for picnics. Children swing and climb jungle gyms. Teenagers shoot hoops on a court that once hosted a candlelight vigil. Life has returned, but the memory remains. And that's how David would have wanted it. In quiet moments, fellow officers still remember the little things. His way of disarming a tense moment with a calm joke, the way he remembered people's names, even those he arrested. One officer shared, "He didn't care if you'd messed up. He cared if you were willing to do better. That's what made him different." Perhaps the most powerful symbol of David's legacy is not carved in stone or written in policy, but living in the decisions his story inspired. Because since his death, no officer in Atchison has been killed in the line of duty. Because his final call, that simple, ordinary nuisance complaint, reminded a city that no call is ever routine. Because his sacrifice changed how an entire community views service. There will never be a full answer to why Skylar Barbie did what he did. The questions linger, the motive remains foggy. But Sergeant Ensbrenner's life never needed explanation. It spoke for itself. He was a father, a husband, a protector. And in the face of a senseless act, he became a symbol of everything good that policing should be. Steady, compassionate, fearless. Years from now, a child playing at Ensbrenner Park may ask, "Who was that bench named after?" And a parent might answer, "He was the kind of man who ran toward trouble, not away. The kind of man who helped people when nobody else showed up. The kind of man we were lucky to have, even for a little while." That, more than any ceremony or speech, is the story that will endure. Because Sergeant David Ensbrenner didn't just serve Atchison. He defined it.